Welcome to Cashflow Positive. I'm your host, Kenny Bedwell, founder of SCR Insights, one of the leading data platforms in the industry. Through using data and analytics, I've been able to replace my W-2 with cash flow from my successful short-term rentals. And my goal is to help you achieve the same freedom and success. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just a novice looking to make your mark, Cashflow Positive is your go-to resource for unlocking the full potential of your property portfolio. Hey everybody, welcome back to the part two episode for this week of Cashflow Positive, of recent hard lessons learned by Kenny Bedwell. So in the first episode, I talked about some of the recent struggles I had with some designers and contractors and dealing with some just bad work overall and things not getting done and promises not being delivered. And I talked about some of the lessons I learned from that. So I want to continue on from that and share more of some of the other recent things I'm seeing too that I'm not hearing a lot of people talk about. And I think it's going to be really important for those of you who are looking to acquire cashflowing properties and also set up and launch a cashflowing property as well. This will also help you know, is now a good time to actually acquire another property, or should you wait a little longer? So let's talk about each of these subjects on this part two episode of Cashflow Positive. Let's dive into it. Okay, so one thing I really didn't get a chance to break down in the last episode was understanding holding costs. Okay, so one of the problems that I faced and recently with some of the newer properties we're launching, especially the bigger ones, we're talking over 3,000 square feet, the time it takes to get these properties ready and launched to go. I mean, it takes months, you know. Are you, or including myself, are we actually running in our pro forma? Are we taking into account the holding costs of that property sitting there, not earning any revenue for at least 3 or however many months, you know, it takes to do that project? But are we taking that into account? Most people know. In fact, I hardly ever see that in any pro formas. And so, you know, hitting the ground running when you acquire a property, meaning it's under contract, is absolutely critical to minimizing those holding costs that you might experience throughout that acquisition to launch phase. Another ongoing issue about buying, especially out of state, is managing the management of the project. Who is actually managing getting it ready to go? I really, really advise having someone, unless you're going to do it yourself, having somebody not just, you know, piecemealing, like subcontracting everything out, meaning like you subcontract out the design to one person, you subcontract out maybe the furnishings to another person, like to set up the furnishings, you subcontract out like some of the contract work to somebody else. And then you're the GC or the general contractor, meaning you're orchestrating everything. You can do this, but number one, it's very time consuming. And number two, you would need to visit the property through each phase. And if you cannot do that, then you need to have a local GC oversee the project for you, because there are so many little things that don't get done when we piecemeal all this crap out and we don't have anyone boots on the ground to oversee and be like, hey, you know what? This hot tub needs a cover. Who's going to set that up? You know, or we need to connect things, or, you know, this property came with old furniture. What are we going to do with that? Where is that going to go? How is the dumpster going to work? How long is the dumpster going to be there? You know, like all these like different little things that people don't think about when setting up an STR pop up. And if you don't have someone local boots on the ground to kind of oversee the project and the progress of it and to return a report to you, you're going to run into some issues, especially when you try to get to the finish line, and it's going to be a bumpy landing. You know, I did one locally. I relaunched Watkins Glen, the lake property. And I was the GC, even though like I had a contractor and a painter and, you know, a handyman and like paint, you know, like cleaners and all this stuff, like people, but I was orchestrating it and I was there in person. I was going like once a week to check in on the property and just make sure things were getting done. And I realized, hey, you know what? We didn't think about this. We didn't think about that. And then I start making phone calls, you know, hey, I need someone to wash the outside of the windows. I need someone to, you know, redo some of the front or cut down some of the trees in the front. Just little things that, you know, on paper or just like generic pictures, we don't think about. And if I was out of state, I would have never thought about those things or caught those things and therefore would have missed it, you know, and then that would have set me back, especially with hiring Andrew Keller to come out there and actually shoot the property. And so we need to
make sure that number one, you're holding, you know, understanding holding costs of this, but then number two, having some sort of boots on the ground to oversee the project, or you have to go in person to see it every once in a while through each of the phases. Getting the property ready to guest ready, not heavy, guest ready, is actually the challenging part. It's really easy to get a property 90% complete. Okay. So 90% finished. Anybody who's done a renovation, even in my own house, we're doing renovations right now. We're trying to move to North Carolina. And the problem is we've been, you know, like everyone can say this pretty much, unless you live in a new house. We've been renovating for the last like 2 years, right? Like the kitchen, the bathroom, like, and they're good, but it's not 100% finished. It's like 90% finished. Like, oh, we still need to paint. We still need to put this like, you know, quarter round trim up, and we need to put some of the crown molding and finish this and do that and touch up here. And it's like, oh, you know, we're going to get to it when we get to it. But now it's like, crap, we need to finish it. And that typically happens with a lot of our short-term rentals is we kind of get close. And if we don't have that person that's going to do the actual finishing, we haven't paid anybody to do the finishing, that falls on our shoulders. And if you aren't planning to be there to set it up, and you're not planning to be there to kind of oversee it, the property will not get to a point to be guest ready until it's too late, meaning your photographer shows up and things just aren't really staged appropriately, or things are missing and so on. And so you need to get the property to guest ready by either having that local person that's going to oversee it, or you're going to have to go oversee it. When I say oversee it, don't just drop in and then drop out. Like, go spend the night in it. Like, try to sleep in your place. Because you won't, you like, the Watkins Glen property, for example, we redid 5 bathrooms. Okay. I made it a personal challenge to take 5 showers in each of the bathrooms, use all 5 toilets, all 5 sinks, everything to figure out the kinks. I also, in the kitchen, there were a ton of outlets, and I did this in the bathrooms too. I went in every single outlet and tested my charger. I checked every single light. I checked every single thing that they did, every cabinet, every, you know, this and that. Checked it all, fans, vents, all that good stuff that they touched and did. I lights, turned them on, everything. And I found stuff. I found little things. Oh, this outlet wasn't working. The hot water, you know, they have like safety, like, where you can turn, it was one of those showers where you like turn the hot water and, they kind of have like a safety knob thing where they, it's on the back end of the shower where it doesn't like, oh, it like keeps people from scalding themselves, you know, with the hot water. And they put it like way too far. So it was like barely warm. Like it was like lukewarm. And I was like, guys, like what the heck? Like, no, you know? And so, so that was one thing I was kind of going around testing. There were some outlets that weren't working and, you know, a light out here and there. It's just like, here's a list, you know, and then I have that buffer for them to come back and come and fix it. And I'm telling them, guys, I'm coming to this property. I'm going to spend the night here and I'm going to walk through and I'm going to check everything. Be prepared because I will find something. And so they're on alert. You know, I came in on a Monday or a Sunday, you know, they came in the next day on Monday. They were already prepared to come in on Monday to take care of whatever needed to be done. Same thing with the painter. Hey, this needs to be touched up. This has to be, I mean, she painted the whole house. You know, do I expect it to be perfect? No, she did a really, really good job though. I was actually really impressed. So, like there was very little that she needed to touch up. And it looks dang good. And the same thing with Kentucky. I'm going there. Pictures aren't until Friday. I'm going on Tuesday, a 10,000 square foot house. I'm going to be able to test everything in a day. Got a couple days, but the team's there, you know, they're on standby. It's like, let's get this stuff done. And let's land the plane, let it all kind of come together. It's really funny how these things come together very last minute. It's, you know, I walked in Sunday at photos Tuesday, walked in Sunday, the place was a mess. Okay. And it took 7 cleaners, the handyman, myself, my wife, getting everything ready to go to, you know, frame thing or put things, hang things, clean the property, you know, test stuff out and make sure it was ready. And then things still weren't perfect yet. And so the contractors are coming in and fixing it while we're trying to get all this other stuff ready. So it was crazy. And it came together and we landed the plane. Did we experience turbulence? Yeah, we did. But we were prepared and we had that little buffer. Now, obviously, like we get like a day buffer, right? But the bigger the property, the more time buffer there needs to be. And so recent lesson learned was have a time buffer, have a little space, because that property, when it's finished, according to the contractors, and you go there in person, expect to find things that aren't quote unquote finished. Time in and time out. There's like 3-4 properties this year alone from me personally going, they're going, contractor saying, yep, we're done. Stager saying, yep, we're done. And then you go in person, you're like, wait a second. This is missing. This is missing. This is missing. I need to order on Amazon ASAP for some of this stuff. Or I got to get somebody to come back and fix something or whatever. So keep that in mind as you're getting ready to launch a property, that it doesn't matter who's setting it up. You need to go in person before that final launch just to make sure, and spend the night at the property, test out the bathrooms, showers, the kitchen, the appliances, everything, and make sure it's all good to go. I couldn't tell you how many appliances I threw out when we were refurnishing Watkins Glen. I was like, this is too used. Like, it's time to switch this out. It's like, this is all new. We don't want crappy stuff in here. And so we just boop, buy new things and put it in there and make it, you know, at the quality where it's at right now. And so I'm really excited for that property to relaunch. And I'll definitely show some before and afters. It's a big transformation. I mean, people couldn't even recognize the place. We had fun with it. Anyway, okay. The next thing I want to talk about, so I want to move away from just like kind of the launching and the holding cost stuff, but those are really, really important. Those are recent lessons that I've learned, but let's talk about what's going on. And I'm going to sit on this for a while, market conditions and what I'm currently seeing in the last quarter. Cause I mean, we're wrapping up Q1 right now. So it's the end of March, and the real estate market has seen some interesting turn of events. So let's just take a look at the facts. Fact number one, the median listing days on market, or it's probably more so the average listing days on market for properties just in general on the market is 56 days. So meaning on average, a property is sitting on the market for 56 days. Okay. So that's big. Early, like during COVID, when it was like the height of the market, it was like 13 days. That's a pretty big swing. This didn't happen overnight. It gradually picked up, but because interest rates have plateaued, okay, not they've gone down a tick. And when I say a tick, maybe like a quarter of a point lower, a quarter percent lower. So like right now they're like high sixes, maybe low sevens, unless you get bad terms and you're in the mid sevens to eights, which I still see and I kind of chuckle at because I know there's better lenders out there, but it is, you know, people choose who they choose. Shop around for your lenders, folks. But even with interest rates plateauing, inventory is just sitting. So properties are sitting a little bit longer. But inventory, especially for short-term rentals, has gotten pretty tricky. I rarely see, you know, amazing quality properties pop up every single week. It's once in a while. And we have to be, we kind of spider out over across many, many markets across the country. And it's like maybe once a month do we see something, even in some of these big popular markets, that, you know, not only makes sense revenue wise, but makes sense from like a purchase wise. I'll also add to that and say that, you know, a lot of people are looking for months and months and months and even years, and they're like, well, nothing makes sense purchase price wise. What are you saying? And so part of it too is understanding that because properties have been sitting on the market for a while, we know that sellers are willing to negotiate a little more. We do still see a lot of sellers today in la-la land, meaning thinking it's like 2 years ago or 3 years ago with prices. But the reality is, prices are coming down. And sometimes if they're in la-la land, we let their property sit until they're willing to, you know, come back to the negotiation table. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. We have to walk away from it. But we are getting a lot of seller credits, meaning that these properties, although they're offered at, you know, let's say we have an $800,000 home, we can go in and offer 750, maybe even 725. I mean, we put a property recently under contract for, so 690 with 90K in seller credits, okay? So, which means that assuming the property appraises at 690, we'll go and get a loan on 690. And then at the closing table, the seller will give us $90,000 back that we can use for furnishings and amenities or to typically a contractor. Now with seller credits, let me be clear on that. Obviously, I only advise you use seller credits for a contractor and not take it as cash. That gets really sketchy and gray pretty quickly when you do it that way. Seller credit should only be paid for hiring a designer or a contractor on your property. But we're getting a lot of seller credits on the majority of properties we're looking at. Now, that doesn't mean that there's a lot of good properties out there. It just means that we're able to find some and work out the price and the cash, have less cash out of pocket on these deals. So I'm seeing a lot of sellers acquiesce to that. But the problem, though, is we're also seeing a lot of appraisals come in low. Sometimes we have to get a second appraisal or maybe even a third appraisal if the seller is still refusing to drop down. But we've had some sellers say, hey, look, I'm not going to pay the gap or cover the gap for you, meaning you have to pay it. You have it under contract for $1 million, but the appraiser said it's only worth $900,000. Well, you got a $100,000 gap. And so sometimes it makes sense to pay it, and other times it just doesn't. We have to walk away, and we're seeing a lot of that happening too. And so it's just kind of this transition into being more of a buyer's market. Okay. With inventory, with the spring coming, starting to get a little bit better in recent weeks. Man, January was brutal. It was really bad, but it was bad the year before too in 2024. So, you know, it's just one of those things. But as we're trying to find these awesome properties, it gets tricky because we're really looking for properties that have the moat, the thing that separates you from everybody else. And so with inventory being a little bit challenging, some sellers still being a little la-la land, you can imagine how difficult it is. But how many eyes are on properties too? And so as I share more and more information, a lot of people are picking that up and trying to use that and apply that. And we're seeing some competition for the better properties. But the ones that we're not, and this is what I encourage most people to go after, are the properties that need some sort of renovation or update. There's a lot of those out there, and there's a lot of good ones out there too. But I don't see a lot of investors scooping up because they're not as obvious as some of the other types of properties, you know, that are already updated, that are already renovated. And so there's less and less competition for these BRRRs, meaning, you know, the renovation ones, and they're actually better deals. It's kind of backwards thinking, but a lot of people get scared off from the fact of hiring a contractor and going through that whole mess. But with all the services available in today's STR market world, you know, you can hire a company to come and do it all for you, especially in these bigger popular markets. There's actually several that will do it. I know I've personally worked with three that will do everything from the design, the contracting, the GCing, everything for you for a particular property, obviously depending on the price. And not the price of the property, but the amount of work that needs to be done. And if it's a big renovation, it's going to be expensive. But if the price of the property is right and the numbers make sense, then, you know, it's just finding the financing to cover the renovation costs. And that's also readily available as well, that people aren't leveraging. Everyone's going for second home loans or DSCR loans. Those are the most common. Rarely am I seeing someone do a bridge loan or, you know, I'm not a really big fan of anyone. Like, I get asked all the time, should I build new construction? No, not right now. Don't go build new construction. It just takes too long and your holding costs are actually really, really high. So like, I just don't really advise. I get that question all the time recently. Well, I could just easily go build. Cool. Go buy the land. And then you got to get a loan on that. It's a lot more difficult. So bridge loans and also renovation loans is a big one that I don't see a lot of investors leveraging. And there's a lot of good options out there and lenders still have an appetite for that. But with that being said, you know, with the current market conditions, and I'm seeing a lot of short-term rental investors who bought, whether they're making money or not, and a lot of times they might actually be making money. They're just selling, they're exiting to buy bigger properties or bigger assets or go into other types of investments. So are people leaving the industry? Not as many as coming into the industry, but there are people leaving the industry today. But I'm seeing a lot of people try to sell properties for a premium based off what they were cash flowing and thinking, like, not doing the math behind what a buyer would have to pay, you know, with current interest rates, and then but selling at this like high premium. And they get really, really mad at me when I tell them it doesn't make sense because, like, just plug in the numbers in a pro forma and, you know, like, you it's just like, dude, just put in a spreadsheet and tell me, like, would you buy the property? And they're always like, well, what if a cash buyer came? And I was like, we could what if all day long. What if, you know, the governor of your state wanted to buy it? I don't know. Like, what if whatever? It doesn't matter. But for investors, it doesn't make sense. And so we're seeing a lot of people trying to sell their short-term rental properties at prices that don't make sense based on revenue. And that's not how it works. So be careful with those. When it comes to value adds and other types of stuff, the value adds have become really popular, but we have to be careful when we're looking. I'm seeing more and more real estate agents get more desperate, especially for business. A lot of them are hurting year over year, especially in the last like 2 to 3 years. They're just not getting as much business. And so I'm seeing them call deals what they think are deals, and they're not. Okay. And they get upset when you challenge them, because they're like, well, if somebody somebody with $400,000 comes in and puts all this money into this property, it can do this. And it's like, sure, but most people don't have that. And why would you put, $400,000 into design, decor, and amenities on like a $500,000 or $600,000 property, that not including down payment? So it's like, you're not going to get that and appreciate. It's like, it's not for actual real estate investors. It's for people who just want to buy and hold something, like place a bunch of money that they have that they don't need a cash on cash return for. And they just put it into a property and it's purely for cash flow and purely to sit there for a very, very long period of time. And it's not meant for scaling. And so that's not, there's people out there like that. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. I'm not saying there is, but most people aren't like that. And so you have to be careful and you have to pay attention to, when you're speaking to real estate agents today, who are they trying to attract to them, especially on certain properties? I hear the term super property passed around now. Next potential super property. It's like every property, according to them, could be the next potential super property. But the reality is, does it make real estate investment sense? And I don't see a lot of people talking like that today. And that's a lesson that needs to be learned, is not only does it need to make sense from a cash flow perspective, but it also needs to make sense from a real estate investing standpoint. And I've talked about this, I believe, on the podcast before. And if I haven't, let me know in a review, or I don't know, just like reach out to me and message me. I can talk more about this. But like, the reality is, a lot of people today are not looking at properties from a real estate investor, meaning, is this property going to appraise? And if I sell it in 3 to 5 years, will I actually make money from it? Whereas a lot of people are over investing, meaning they're spending too much money on the design decor, buying at the top of the market on purchase price, and it not, if they had to sell in 3 to 5 years, they'd be in trouble. But let me say this, if your plan is to hold the property for more than 5 years, then a lot of that stuff actually does make sense. Okay. However, the track record for most STR investors who are trying to scale, this is really important, trying to scale, not trying to maintain or sustain or stabilize, but trying to scale to bigger properties, are not holding for more than 5 years. Okay. So understand where you fall in your investment journey and know how to approach each deal. If I'm trying to scale, I'm looking for undervalued properties, or borderline, not distressed, but needing some updates, needing some things where I can force appreciation, but also cash flow on, in hopes in 3 to 5 years I can sell and exit and make money on the sell. The fact of the matter is, you should make more money selling the property than you did from all the cash flow you generated. For example, my Watkins Glen property, maybe not the best example, but still pretty good. I make a lot of money on that property for the purchase price at $350,000. Okay, remember, I bought this property for $350,000. Last year, cash flow was like $70,000, something insane like that. I need to go look at the P&L again. I couldn't believe it when I saw it. But I grossed $144,000 on that. Even with debt service and all the other stupid expenses I had on that thing, still, obviously, cash flowed a lot, like around $70,000. Okay, well, I've only had that thing for, this is the third season now. So I'm coming into year three, so 2 seasons. We'll call it, like, first year was a little bit less. It was like 50,000. Now it's like, 70,000. So, I'm looking at 120, but because of the amount of cash flow, if I were to sell that property today, it would be worth $650,000 to $700,000. Okay. I could sell it to an investor because it's in an LLC. It's a commercial property. It's got a permit zoned as a business. I can sell it as a business for that purchase price. Okay. So, now, am I saying that you should go and buy that property from me? No, I'm not, because that's not a real estate investment play. It's a buy and hold play. But because of the cash flow, that's why it would be attractive to an investor who wants to do that. Okay. But as buyers, I'm telling you not to buy those ones. But as sellers, that's what you want to get to. That's what you want to strive for. So that is a $300,000 difference. I've not made $300,000 in cash flow, and I won't make $300,000 for probably another like maybe 7 to 9 years. So selling that property in 3 to 5 year range, or in other words, my return on equity is actually really like, I'm going to make most of my money from the sell of the property and not from the cash flow. Even the cash flow is really, really good. The trick, the hard part though, and this is the hard part for me personally, is cool, Kenny, I can make $300,000 on that property, but where am I going to put the money? Right? Because I have to 1031 or I have to pay tax on the capital gains, which is the $300,000. So where do I put that money that will give me the same cash flow and also continue to appreciate? That's the struggle for myself because, I mean, technically I'm sitting on a unicorn. You know, should I get rid of a unicorn because I can? I don't know about that. So that's the struggle, right? But some of my other properties, like the ones in Buffalo that were smaller, that were good ROI, the cash flow was like $15,000 to $20,000. They're done. They're out. I've sold them and invested in other assets, maybe a long term. I got a long term rental and got another short term rental. Like I've gotten rid of properties to scale up that haven't made sense because the appreciation was $200,000, $300,000 and was able to roll that into other things that produce more cash flow and will have greater appreciation over time. Okay. But understand like what you're going into before you make moves in the market today, because it ain't easy. All right. Now, that being said, going back to everything, look, I help people find what they're looking for. And if you are going to be doing that, if you are going to be selling and looking to scale up, let's talk about it. Okay. Let's sit down and literally let's plan it all. I do this all the time with people. It's like, let's map this sucker out. Okay. Because the last thing you want to do is sell your property and then be like, oh crap, now what? Where do I go? What do I look for? How's this going to work? And so I could help you with that. So feel free to reach out to me and let's talk about it and how I can help you do those things. Okay. So really what I'm seeing with market conditions, there's a lot of people entering the space still. It's not as bad as it was, but still people are trying to get in. Elevated design, decor, and amenities. That's one thing I want to talk about too. Lessons I've learned about that. People are in a lot of these, especially very competitive markets, people are struggling. Okay. And I've talked about the keeping up with the Joneses. I don't remember what episode I did that on, but I talked about it at length. And if you remember that episode, great. If you haven't, just go listen to all my episodes and you'll find it eventually. I don't remember which one it was, but it's this idea, this concept of you can buy in a competitive market and you can add all the amenities on top of the world, but people will copy you if you don't have a moat, the thing that separates you from everybody else, okay, that they can't replicate. So what happens in these competitive markets is even though you're making good money, you have to constantly be reinvesting into your property, adding the next best thing. For example, adding the pickleball court, then adding the pickleball court that glows in the dark, you know, and then adding an indoor pickleball court. And then like, it just keeps going on and on and on. And the cash flow that you make from the property, you're not actually like saving it to roll or snowball into another property or, you know, spend it on your time freedom or whatever. You're spending it on that property still. And it's not true cash flow. And so today, this is what's going on. This is what people are doing in very, very competitive markets. That's why I keep pushing people away from competitive markets as best I can to focus more on tertiary markets or secondary markets or markets that are vacation markets that people aren't talking about near state parks. I did a whole, this was like last week's episode. So like, go back and listen to that. Other types of markets that are really, really good to invest in that no one's talking about. And the problem I'm seeing in these popular markets is this constant reinvestment of into amenities to keep up with the Joneses and try to stand out because they're losing money or they're not making as much as what they used to. And that level is going to keep rising each and every single year, and especially in these competitive markets. And so what I'm seeing today is a world of competition is increasing, even of the hosts. So the weak are going to get cut out and the strong are going to rise to the top. But the cash flow is going to dwindle on the average. Okay. So we have to obviously try to be in the top 10 or 1% of the market. And if you don't have a lot of capital, you don't need to be going to those competitive markets. You need to find markets like my Watkins Glen. They're all over the country where you can set yourself apart and you're not having to outspend your neighbor. Okay. There's still a lot of markets out there that aren't using dynamic pricing, that don't have hot tubs or basic amenities that you can do well in. You just need to do the research and take the time to do it. But I'm seeing this today over and over and over. And it's going to be harder in the near future to just enter into some of these markets and compete, because not only do you have to compete on amenities, but now you have to compete on branding and marketing, and you have to compete on pricing and revenue management. And so with all the revenue managers going on and all these other things, you're going to have to compete and continue to try to keep up. And it's going to be harder to enter into more competitive markets. And that's what I'm seeing in the Smokies and Scottsdale, or definitely Florida. I mean, that was like last year, 2 years ago, to be honest. And people are exiting because it just doesn't make sense in some of these markets to enter in and try to compete unless you have the capital to do so. So be smart about it. Think about where you want to invest and how you want to compete and market. And if you feel like it's too competitive, it probably is. There are plenty of other markets out there that aren't, that are still really good vacation rental markets. Go listen to my other episodes. Go watch the YouTube channel. And by the way, if you haven't been watching the YouTube channel, I've dropped some really good videos about my personal mistakes I've made and also lessons I've learned and how to find deals and markets and blah, blah, blah. Really good videos, and they're edited, like high quality editing. So they're entertaining, I guess. If you're listening to podcasts, in my opinion, the YouTube videos are way more entertaining than the podcast. So I get it. You're probably driving or listening in the car, just like whatever. But go check out the YouTube when you have a moment. I have some really good content I've been dropping on there. So what I just want to conclude everything here, wrap everything up, and just some of the lessons I've learned is, you know, the market's maturing. Okay, that's the overall consensus that I want to relay to you guys. Market's maturing. It's still a buyer's market. It's getting to be more of a buyer's market, I should say. But still, that doesn't mean there's a lot of good deals out there. You got to really, really know what to look for. You got to have the resources, the realtor, the team to know what to look for. And so if you need help, if you have questions about anything I talk to, just reach out to me. Would love to chat about it. And finally, guys, if, go check out the YouTube channel at STR Insights. There's also at the Cashflow Positive YouTube channel, but that's not the one I've been posting videos to. It's at the STR Insights one. So check out the YouTube channel. I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you took some lessons away. If you're preparing to buy, this is a really important one. Still, it's a good time to buy. I don't think it's a bad time. And in fact, I would rather be buying today than waiting till the end of the year, because that's when all the costs that people are going to just run in, especially with bonus depreciation possibly coming back because of, you know, Donald Trump and the tax cuts and all that good stuff. And so can you imagine the end of the year? You know, especially starts around September when all these people start swarming in trying to buy properties. It's going to be insane. So start looking now would be my, like, if you're thinking about buying this year, now is better than later, because you'll have a better opportunity to find something and still catch that end of summer to fall booking season instead of trying to buy something in fall and then catch the slow season in the summertime. So unless you buy in a ski market. So anyway, those are my final thoughts. I hope you enjoyed this episode, and hopefully I see you back on the next episode, or not. We'll see. All right. Thanks for listening.